Welcome to the Mostly Erlang podcast. This is EP number 20, and we're talking about Erlang on Zen. I'm the substitute host for today. My name is Eric Merritt. I'm the writer or author of one of the authors of Erlang and OTP in Action, and have been talking about Erlang for a long time and doing a bunch of Erlang open source projects. That's my claim to fame. Fred, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Fred Hébert, and I'm the author of Learn Use Erlang for Great Good, and I'm also working on the routing team at Heroku.
All right, and we have the
I'm Maxim Kharchenko, and I'm the primary author of Erlang on Zen.
I'm Viktor Savetov. I am playing the role of architect in Erlang on Zen project.
Okay, so why don't we get started by you guys just telling us a little bit about Erlang on Zen. I suspect a lot of people are familiar with the title, but I suspect that less people are actually familiar with what you guys are doing.
So Erlang on Zen started with the observation so that Erlang essentially looks like a complete operating system and have all the attributes of an operating system, and it would be good to try to get rid of this of the operating system underneath. So that was just a vague idea of this kind, and it was started as a hobby project, essentially of mine, 4 years ago, I guess, probably more.
Yes, Maxim have strange hobby to write new Erlang virtual machines. It's
yeah.
Not the first in the line, actually fourth.
Yes, I was. Yeah, it looks like I was implementing Erlang for, I guess, for 15 years or something, which is a long time. And this last reincarnation of Erlang is essentially the Erlang on Zen kind of. It's everybody should realize this is a complete rewrite of the Erlang virtual machine, so it doesn't have a single line of code in common with the Erlang OTP.
So that's something I actually did not realize. For the longest time, I've been assuming that Erlang on Zen was just a port of the Erlang virtual machine to Zen.
This is what I expected to, and it probably explains why the marketing material kept saying that it booted a new virtual machine to spawn a single process to do everything. And I just kept wondering why the hell is that a thing to do in the first place. But if it's an entire rewrite, then it probably makes more sense based on that architecture.
Yes, this is the entire rewrite, and with a special emphasis put on a faster startup. So I was trying to eliminate anything from the startup code which could be done during compile time. So everything is moved to the compile time.
So what are the semantic differences between the kind of standard Erlang virtual machine and the Zen version, your version of the of a virtual machine for Erlang?
Yeah.
Like, we know we the community is pretty familiar with some of the things that make the Erlang virtual machine interesting around garbage collection and concurrency and scaling and all these kinds of things. So what are some of the semantic differences that you can point out that is both, you know, positive for your implementation and negative?
I would say that the Erlang on Zen virtual machine is 100% compatible in terms of beam files.
Mm-hmm.
So it has is exactly the same. It understands the same exactly the same beam file format which
can be
uses.
Produced by Erlang standard compiler.
Yeah, but also a few minor things are probably not compatible. For instance, tracing. So, for instance, debugging. So all kind of, for instance, options which could be passed to the process. Actually, nobody knows about them and nobody's used them, but they are incompatible.
Okay.
So from a point of view of 99.99% of Erlang programmers, they are exactly the same.
Now, I'm no expert on Xen, right? It's my understanding that Xen likes to own the threading of, or own the processes, for example, the things that are running on top of it. So you don't have insight, or at least Xen itself wants to own multiplexing across CPUs, right? So it doesn't surface information about CPUs so that your VM can do the multiplexing, right?
Actually, the Xen as a platform is almost the same as x86.
Okay.
So it just you have almost just like a bare bones x86, but with a simpler devices.
Okay.
So that's the only difference.
Okay. Cool.
Much simpler and much more predictable because, of course, there are no variety of devices under Xen.
Mm-hmm.
So the only devices available is paravirtualized network and hard drive interfaces.
Okay. Yeah. Now, how did you guys... So one of the things that make Erlang interesting is the Erlang virtual machine interesting is soft real-time capabilities, right? And that has a lot to do with like how garbage collection works, the fact that that the garbage collection is integrated extremely tightly with the scheduler in Erlang, right? And that the garbage collection doesn't have to traverse the entire heap, and it only has to traverse single processes and this kind of thing, on top of the timeouts and everything that's built into OTP and it's built into like the receive clause of the language itself. How does your implementation of the VM kind of stack up there?
Actually, I'm not sure how the garbage collection implemented in Erlang, or even in Beam. So I think that I definitely keep the promise of soft real timeness as Beam does. So the garbage collection code is quite complex, definitely.
I can imagine.
And also, it's incremental, and it's quite tricky. I mean, quite advanced. So it's exactly though you essentially cannot change anything in those parts of code. So those are the most intricate parts of Erlang on Xen. So definitely not naive or a student project. So it's quite advanced. So that's what I can say. But if people would use it more, they may stumble upon something, but not anything bad didn't happen today.
All right.
It's probably worth. Hi, Francesco.
Hello, Francesco. Would you like to introduce yourself real quick? There
okay.
You go.
Hi, everyone. Sorry, it took a while to get Google Hangouts working.
Yeah.
Francesco, the founder of Erlang Solutions and, currently technical director. Hi, everyone.
Hello, and we're just talking with the Xen folks on Erlang on Xen, talking about some implementation details of the Erlang on Xen virtual machine.
So, I had a question about that. Because it's an entirely new virtual machine implementation, did you have any concerns regarding the ability to sandbox Erlang code? One of the things that comes up from time to time in the Erlang mailing lists is that the current Beam virtual machine is actually impossible to make secure to random code execution or something. You have to close it from the network, and you cannot have the option to do sandboxing and be running dynamic code from whoever. Is that something that Erlang on Xen should be able to do it to some extent or something?
Well, potentially. So the Zen itself is a quite a robust sandbox. So probably it's one of the best. It provides Zen provides the probably the best isolation in terms of security and between virtual machines which belong to different clients, different companies. Amazon EC2 uses it, and like kind of everybody starts to use it. And we run Erlang as a just another guest operating system inside a Zen domain. So that's, I would say that this is pretty, like it's kind of better, it's definitely better sandboxing than a Linux process. On one side, we also do not allow any native code in provided by users. So we do not have native
NIFs and
no NIFs and essentially no LinkedIn drivers. So everything is kind of pure Erlang. So so we will have arguably better sandboxing in terms of Erlang, and also we have Zen, which is I don't know, the best isolation there nowadays. So that's
I had another question related to the marketing material that you had that, again, at some point said that you would spawn a virtual machine instance for every request. And I was wondering, how is that working with the idea of long-lived processes? So in some cases, you might have processes that live across multiple requests and might be living 4 days at a time. So is this something compatible with Erlang on Zen in the context of using it for web service or server software?
Yes, friend. Thank you for the question. Actually, we are quite prepared to for long-running processes. Definitely, Erlang was conceived as a system which essentially runs forever. And Erlang on Zen, being yet another Erlang, is definitely prepared to run forever. We could make it much simpler if it was not the case. So, for instance, our garbage collection strategy, and we also have this very detailed and careful out-of-memory behavior. It's all about it's all heavily optimized for long-running processes.
What have you found is the best approach? So we're talking about security, we're talking about isolation. On the other hand, Erlang is also very much about distribution. And I think you had a great demo in, was it the functional meetup, functional conference in Kiev recently?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
How do you find, what is the best approach to, getting the distribution layer working across a thousand Zen instances, for example.
Mm-hmm. Francesco, I would say that this is an open question. So what we are trying to induce is to just gather momentum in the community so that the distribution layer in Erlang should be made different. So
we are in perfect agreement here. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But we do not have all the answers here.
Okay. I was hoping you would.
Yeah. we have an ideas in this regard. So one of the approach which is partially implemented as a prototype which you mentioned is that it could be worthwhile to try to use 9P protocol as a basis for this new distribution layer.
And speaking generally, maybe the best idea is to expand Erlang's model of supervisors and workers to nodes.
Yeah. Yeah, so we may have, for instance, a supervisor tree for computing nodes. So that looks like an Erlang way of doing this.
Okay, and then so I assume you'd use software-defined networking for the lower levels to get the actual communication layers working. So you create supervision trees for nodes and basically node hierarchies,
mm-hmm.
which makes perfect sense. I think you should probably have a look at what's happening with release, where they're looking at they're working on a similar problem. Where the first problem they solved was the ontology. So looking at, what terminology do you actually use to describe massively large-scale distributed systems, which dynamically have to scale up and shrink at the same time based on demands. But I'm thinking more in terms of lower-level networking and the whole distribution layer. How would you limit the distribution layer?
Francesco, I think that the problem with Erlang currently is that you don't have enough visibility into those lower layers. I think that the cloud stack itself must expose much more information to applications and Erlang applications. You should have a direct interface into your open flow speech, just you should have a direct interface into cloud management. So that should be the basis for true scalable infrastructure and applications. But these are huge area. So we're kind of covering with Erlang on Zen, we're just providing a small building block for that.
Realistically, actually, cloud is a computer and cloud stack is operating system nowadays. So to be able to run proper software and use resources properly, we have to access our operating system application interfaces. So it's quite reasonable to have an access from cloud applications to cloud stack.
Let me ask a question that's popped into my mind as you guys have been talking. Is your goal to stay compatible with the Beam? That is, if I write a system that's designed to run on the standard Erlang distribution or the one that comes from Ericsson, should I be able to pick that up and drop it on Erlang on Zen and have it just run?
It's definitely a goal number one.
Okay.
So the first of all, we will want to be compatible. That's the first goal, and then we may want to try to make it faster, make it get other optimizations. But definitely compatibility is number one goal.
So
it's not that easy because we have, for instance, we have very limited file system because we have a peculiar networking. So there are incompatibilities there. But we definitely want to pick RabbitMQ and put it on Erlang and Zen and run it, and it should behave.
So come back, if at some point, for example, the results of the release project are rolled into Erlang itself, you guys are going to try to support that.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. And I have one more question related to that. You mentioned that you don't support native code, LinkedIn drivers and NIFs. Some of the core Erlang API, like the crypto application, right, is based on LinkedIn native code. Have you guys rewritten that, or do you not support it, what's the story with that kind of stuff that's distributed with Erlang?
Yes, it is rewritten. So we support the interface, the same API, but it's implemented differently.
Okay.
It's implemented as a library.
Okay.
So it's not some driver which talks to OpenSSL or
interface was copied one to one, of course.
Yeah.
But the implementation is completely different.
Yeah, that's Yes, that's one of the areas where we have to change change quite a bit.
Okay, that's one question. The next question I was going to ask is, one of the big wins for Erlang is polyglot systems, right? The fact that we write a bunch of code in Erlang and then maybe we have to do some numeric, so we drop into C or some other language. Do you guys plan to support some kind of like the basic driver interfaces at some point? I think port drivers might be really problematic, but LinkedIn drivers or NIFs in the future?
I guess not. So okay. That's the simple question. So the simple answer. Then the reason for that is that we do not like adding any C code. We try to avoid C code wherever we can.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that the re-implementation of distribution layer in C, which was done in BIM,
mm-hmm.
was a very, very bad move. So it's everything is about Erlang. It's being reliable and being, you know, robust. So
okay.
If you add anything in C, this is the area where everything will break one day.
Okay, fair enough. And I agree with that statement actually. But so what is your recommendation for systems, like entire systems that are not pure Erlang, right? That they're Erlang and a little bit of Python, a little bit of C or for whatever reason, or other languages, right?
I see that this kind of system should consist of many instances, some of them running, you know, Python, and some of them running Erlang.
Okay.
So that's we should not think about systems running on a single server. We should think about systems running on a whole cloud infrastructure without any regard to physical node. So we just, if you want some functionality written in Python or in C, you should spawn another instance and just talk over network to it. Or
let me ask, don't you think you need a slightly different mindset when you're approaching Erlang on Zen in how you structure your programs and how you develop your programs? Because I think, you know, Eric's, you know, I mean, just to follow up on all the questions Eric has been asking, you know, it feels like it's a very different, it's a paradigm shift to what we've been used to, you know, developing. You know, to rephrase the question, you know, you're looking at, you know, managing kind of sharp increases, sharp bursts, where, you know, you're firing off new instances and then you're taking them down as soon as you're done with your request.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very different approach to what most Erlang developers have been used to working with.
You're absolutely right, Francesco. So I think that we're kind of trying to drive this paradigm shift. We want to people start to approach applications differently. And in this area, the Erlang on Zen doesn't look completely as a drop-in replacement for BIM or Erlang ITP. So we just, in a way, we're trying to induce people to think differently about applications. So application is from our point of view, is a collection of interacting nodes. And it could be like hundreds of nodes, thousands of nodes, depending on the needs of an application. Even a database application may have hundreds of nodes. So that's our view. Of course, it's very different from what people do with Erlang today. But I think that this should change.
Yeah, from our point of view, it enables absolutely different schemes of how end users can use web infrastructure, for example. Because with Erlang and Zen, it's possible to encapsulate the personal cloud infrastructure inside properly encrypted instances that can run in, hundreds of milliseconds when their owner arrive online. So imagine that you have your Gmail completely encrypted, you share nothing with Google, and it doesn't exist when you are offline. So when you're logging in, your instance starts and provides you the whole bunch of services. Your web interface, access to your mail archive, or everything else.
Yeah, that's what Victor is talking about. Is what we call is autonomous cloud, essentially.
Or so ephemeral services.
Or ephemeral services. Yeah. So there's one day we think so that the cloud architecture, if it's done, for instance, in Erlang. Erlang is the things which kind of runs forever. If the most important things of a cloud are implemented in Erlang, and everything kind of shares the same scalable infrastructure, so this kind of environment will not require any maintenance, any administration. So it will be just kind of the autonomous infrastructure. But it's just a part of our vision. For the future.
So you mentioned that as part of the different way to think about architecture and languages and how to build that stuff. And I've seen a few demos from Erlang Zen projects. Do you have any, I won't say killer apps, but do you have any production or I would say real world services running on that right now that are making use of these new ways of seeing things?
Okay, Fred. Again, the short answer is no. We have things in development, which is one project is security, secure communication related. Another project is essentially is
platform
as a service.
And that will be interesting to follow and see how it develops then.
Yeah, so this is under development. I'm glad so that there are people who ask us for changes and improvements in Erlang and Zen. If we had more people like that, we definitely will be able to make a product which is more serves immediate needs of the community better.
So this begs the question, you guys have been out for over a year now, right? Maybe longer.
Yeah.
How has your adoption been? What kind of usage rates are you guys seeing in general?
In general, not that many. So you can track our usage rate at the builder service, because everything which is built with Erlang and Zen by outsiders is using this service. So there are like 100 people registered there and about 100 projects again.
Okay.
So that's but still all these are just drop in a sea. I mean, yeah. So we didn't kind of build enough traction yet.
Okay, so looking towards the future, like as much as we'd like it to be different, like the Erlang development community, the people that use Erlang in earnest to drive their business is actually really, really teeny compared to Java or Node or or Python or anything like that, right? So there's a pretty limited pool, for now at least, there's a pretty limited pool of potential paying customers. So how do you guys see yourselves moving into a sustainable business? I realize we're getting away from tech, but I'm actually interested in this topic from an Erlang perspective, right? For the future of like enterprise or business use of Erlang, for people having jobs and this kind of thing in Erlang.
Yeah, the very basic idea is to limit the pool by very big customers.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Actually, Erlang and Zen and its usage can be valuable for quite big users of Erlang because it has its unique features which can be reproduced with BIM, with Ericsson's Erlang.
Okay.
So, for example, we can offer better, much better elasticity and probably much better security, not because of Erlang flows in that case, but because of using Linux or Windows or FreeBSD or something else underneath. Mm-hmm. Because every operating system is quite big software, quite big piece of software with security flaws. Mm-hmm. So many intruders can use
Okay. Yeah. So that's one thing. So we think that the future of Erlang on Zen is in the security domain. So that's one thing. But also the we think about the extension of our approach, which is like kind of getting rid of traditional operating system. Mm-hmm. And it has it can be extended not just to different hypervisors. So we may have a version for KVM or even we can run Erlang our Erlang VM as a Linux process. It's also possible. But also to get an adoption for our technologies, we may have to step out of the Erlang altogether, because probably we will one day produce Python on Zen, or I don't know, I mean Java on Zen.
All right.
Yeah, but it's not just because we don't like Erlang. Erlang is kind of the best language out there. But the footprint
just
is quite
extend.
Small.
Yeah.
So we will definitely want to see the community and the adoption of Erlang growing. But you just have to explain to everybody what Erlang is.
Right. Now, right.
It's okay, but. It's not good for a business.
One of the questions which is in the back of my mind, instead of writing your own Erlang VM, wouldn't it have made sense to take Beam and as a starting point and make that compatible?
Mm-hmm. That's one possibility, but I personally spend a lot of time browsing sources of Beam, so probably I don't know days of browsing, and my take on it is that it will be much more difficult to do the porting. So to rewrite it from scratch is just easier to get the same functionality on a new platform. It's because of the so much legacy, so much craft essentially that get accumulated in Beam sources over time. You just see how layers upon layers of functions were added, and how different people were implementing the same things and over and over again using introducing new APIs. It's just so complex. It just I don't know. I mean, somebody may port this to port Beam to Zen or something else, but it will require much more than
It will be very difficult to isolate every piece of code dependent on operating system from Beam.
It's my take, but
you enjoy writing Erlang VMs, so we know that.
that's one thing.
I'm really good at it, so that's right.
Well, there is a thing probably worth to mention, because Erlang on Zen is a completely single-threaded VM.
Yeah.
So it doesn't support SMP in any means.
Yeah.
Completely. So our idea is to run as many virtual machines on the single host as possible and share hardware cores in that way.
Yeah, so that's another grudge of mine against Beam, so that people decided to add SMP to it. So yeah, it was not a good move.
It's quite a different approach with pros and cons, and of course.
But yeah, I was about to say that kind of fundamentally changes the scaling strategy for Erlang, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly, the best you can scale a single VM is to a single process, which one of the big kind of wins for Erlang in the last few years, at least, has been the this kind of linear scaling up to a reasonable amount of CPUs, right? And as soon as we take a big system and break it apart onto multiple VMs, I'm not saying this is necessarily a bad thing, but we're looking at a fundamentally different approach to building large-scale systems, right? Suddenly, our cost of communication with parts of the system jumps up significantly.
Eric, this is not always necessarily the case.
Okay.
Because the communication inside a single physical host, mm-hmm, between the Zen domains, mm-hmm, can be made very cheap.
I mean, okay.
It's essentially a zero copy over a shared memory page.
Okay.
So it may be just slightly slower when message passing inside a single VM, but it's not.
And probably a bit faster on many core meshing because of NUMA.
Okay.
Yeah. NUMA access to memory.
So we can optimize out basically the serialization, deserialization, and those pieces.
Yes.
Okay.
There will be no serialization, deserialization.
And another problem with SMP enabled VMs is migration calls.
Mm-hmm.
Because Erwin Consen instances are very lightweight and we can migrate it in, well, milliseconds, mm-hmm, to another host, another physical host. It's almost impossible for bigger VMs because of huge consumption of memory and very complex state. And probably it would be even harder to find the free physical computer with the same physical resources available.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, when we migrate virtual machine that already uses 16 cores, for example, mm-hmm, we have to find physical computer with 16 free cores available. It may be difficult.
Eric, there is another thing about this migration thing.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, because Erlang on Zen is so simple, and it has so small a state, the state is so small, so we essentially can think about migrating Erlang on Zen between different architectures. So we
CPU
may
architectures.
Yeah, we may okay. think about making then migrating between x86 and ARM server.
Okay.
So that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would actually.
This is definitely not possible with a operating system.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the complexity of state.
It may sound a bit mad, but it can be useful.
It may, yeah. Yeah, but this is,
It does make sense, I think. Not only, I think, speed and scalability here are not, I think the business case you guys are working on. You're trying to get something up and running as quickly as possible, and then you're terminating it as soon as you're done with that particular request. I'm not convinced, we would start running, massively scalable switches on Erlang and Zen anytime soon. I might be wrong, but I still think it's those wouldn't be the primary applications we'd be looking for.
Yeah,
I would say that most of the systems I've done in Erlang have been designed around long-running, stateful services, for lack of a better term. They don't go away and can't go away, right?
Yeah, that's okay.
I've seen a bit of both, personally. I would say that many of the tasks we do at Heroku, one of the systems we have, the routing system, is a lot of short-lived processes, but the one we have for logs where we maintain buffers and state, that one tends to be really long-lived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Erlang can be a good fit for both. I think it really depends about the kind of applications you're working with.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm just saying that the applications that I've tended to work with historically have been more of those long-lived applications rather than short-lived kind of stateless applications.
Right.
Yeah.
This is just a limitation of a tool, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we just providing a different tool, and we're waiting for people to find the best application for that.
Fair enough. And that, I mean, and as you said before, there's nothing that is inherently limiting in Erlang on Xen from a long-running perspective. There's nothing in Erlang on Xen that stops it from being a long-running system, yeah. Right?
Arguably, it's a better long-running system because of its out-of-memory behavior is much more precise. Also, it has much less C code. This is C code. This is what breaks.
So describe you said the out of memory behavior is much more precise. What is the out of memory behavior in Erlang on Xen?
I would say that the Erlang on Xen is never crashes, never aborts on an out of memory condition. Essentially, I do not think about anything than Erlang on Xen aborts. I mean, it's always a process which gets a signal and gets killed. So because of the Erlang on Xen is kind of quasi operating system. Mm-hmm. So you don't have nowhere to fall through. So you have to handle everything yourself. So that's why we do not. We don't just abort then encounter out of memory condition, and it was very hard. I mean, to implement it.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that. What do you do? Watch memory usage until it reaches some threshold that's close to maximum, and then find heavy like processes with large heaps and kill those, or what's going on?
No, we are using. Long jumps, if you know, so it's just ability to do a jump between functions in.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, and it always the system always know which process is executing now.
Mm-hmm.
And after the out of memory condition, the state of the current process is definitely not good. So you have to kill the current process. It's mm-hmm. just not humanly possible to maintain a meaningful state for a current process on out of memory condition. But still, if you kill a current process, which probably the process which is kind of overgrown, it will kind of remedy the situation.
Okay, so when you hit that maximum memory, you basically kill the currently scheduled process, schedule a new one, and then, okay.
Yeah, so that's the approach, but it would be much easier just to kill the virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
But we took the difficult path.
Yeah. All right.
Are you guys planning a really cool demo or killer app? Because I think that's really what you need to start, catering for adoption and increase adoption.
We're actually thinking about like a couple of dozen potential projects which we could build with Erlang on Xen. But many of them they're too risky for us.
Mm-hmm.
So what we were doing in September, we spent almost a month in Silicon Valley, trying to find people with a product idea who would benefit from using our technology in their products. And it was at least there were quite a few eye openers how people may use Erlang on them. So we are currently trying to find we
are essentially problems, which can't be solved by Erlang on Zen.
Yeah, we are in this framework. We looks like a technology providers, and we definitely need somebody else. I mean, a partner of sorts who would build something for end users with us. So we cannot do that ourselves. So we just it's all ends with a demo, mm-hmm. and the demo is not what people pay, you know, $5 per month for.
Right. So how big is your team? Your team is actually fairly small, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're focused on relying on Zen, of course, so you don't have much bandwidth to write interesting systems on top of Erlang on Zen.
You're right. So there are three people in our company. I mean, three founding partners. Mm-hmm. We got a few more employees, but not all of them work on Erlang on Zen. So we got a couple of side projects, which essentially finance
everything else.
Yeah, finance. Yeah, all is tinkering with the future technologies, and one of the interesting developments is this company called Voxus.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they're trying to build Erlang platform as a service, and they want to deploy it on Erlang on Zen. So they are. Quite a good partners for us.
They did quite a lot in that direction.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. That sounds like a really good prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they've got something working.
already.
What was the name of the company building it?
Voxus.
Okay.
V-O-X-O-S.
I think we're getting close to the end of our time, and we can just close out with a few more questions and then work on our picks. How's that sound, guys?
Okay.
Sure. All right. So, Francesco, Fred, final wrap-up questions?
No, I think I don't really have more questions myself.
Okay. Then let's do our picks for this podcast. Francesco, do you have a pick?
Related to what we've been talking about, the release project. I'd like to draw people's attention to it.
Okay.
And looking at getting Erlang to scale on machines with millions of cores. Now, it's very related to what we've been talking about today because, you know, scalability with machines with millions of cores goes very much hand in hand with distribution. And mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of parallel with Erlang on Zen.
And
what Maxime and Victor are trying to achieve.
Okay, excellent. We'll get the link for that. Fred?
Yes, I have two picks that are not really related to anything. Let me just get the tab there in the chat session to put them. Okay, so the first one is the definite page on the Sierpinski triangle, which is a mathematical drawings and stuff, and I found it to be absolutely interesting with all the different ways to draw them that the guy is using on that website. And the other one was a common problem I've had just dealing with Erlang in general, which was getting the graphic stuff with WX to be working on Max and OS X. And this is a link of someone who explains how to do it with the latest versions.
Okay, that's actually a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Maxim and Victor? You have something you'd like to draw folks' attention to?
Well, we're trying to attract as much attention as it possible to Erlang on Zen.
So your pick for this podcast is Erlang on Zen.
By Zclone.
Okay. All right. So we'll get this edited and up. And I'm ending the broadcast now.